Hi, I'm Jim Mason, president of parentalrights.org and Parental Rights Foundation, where we believe in protecting children by empowering parents. You can read more about us at our website at parentalrights.org. And if you want to partner with us or sign up for our email, you can do that there. Today, we're going to talk about a really important parental rights case in the Texas Supreme Court. And I'm thrilled to have as our guest today, Andrew Brown from the Texas Public Policy Foundation. He is a distinguished senior fellow of child and family policy there. He has dedicated his career to serving vulnerable children and strengthening families through community-focused, liberty-minded solutions. Andrew and I both submitted Friend of the Court briefs to the Texas Supreme Court earlier this year. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Jim. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
So, Andrew, I've always known you to be a nice fellow, but what is a distinguished senior fellow?
Basically, what that means is it's a fancy way to say that I handle policies related to children and family issues for the Texas Public Policy Foundation. And they gave me the distinguished title, I guess, because they like me. I don't know.
Cool. So lay the groundwork about this case that we both participated in.
Sure. We were approached summer of last year, actually, by the attorneys for the biological father, Chris. And they reached out because the Texas Public Policy Foundation is the leading liberty-minded think tank in the state of Texas. And we have a litigation shop that often gets involved in issues relating to the constitutional rights of Texans and Americans. Chris's attorneys wondered if we could possibly help them raise the flag on this case because of really the gross injustice that was going on. And as we looked into the case a little bit deeper, we found that, yes, this was something that lined up with not only our principles, but our approach to promoting positive change in public policy to benefit the rights of individuals and families.
So what's the legal issue here? Chris is the biological father of a young boy. How did we wind up in the Texas Supreme Court?
Right, and it's a really long and winding road in a lot of ways. So Chris's
daughter, everybody.
So Chris's daughter at the time all of this started, I believe, was 4 years old. She's five now. Chris and the mother of the little girl were never married, but had a roughly a 50-50 custody arrangement after they split up. By all accounts, worked really well together on co-parenting their daughter. And then early in 2018, the mother tragically dies in a car accident. At that time, the little girl automatically went to live with her father. And then the maternal grandparent...
That's not terribly surprising that when her mother died, she went to live with her father. I mean, there was no reason for her not to go live with her father, was there?
No, not shocking at all. And one of the big issues in this case that we'll get to later is this idea of the fit parent presumption that exists in constitutional law and in statute across the country. And there was never any question that Chris is anything other than a fit parent. So after the little girl went to live with her father, the maternal grandparents decided that they wanted more access. And rather than working it out, as most families would do, it eventually got to the point where they filed a lawsuit in court seeking custody and visitation access to the child. Now, as you know, under the Supreme Court's Troxell decision that transformed grandparent access laws for this nation, they were not able to move forward with that lawsuit because under the Troxell decision and subsequent changes to the law, grandparents lacked standing in that case, under the facts of this case. So into that space was JD, who was basically the live-in boyfriend. The facts are a little bit muddy. He may have been a fiance. It's not really clear. We do know that he had a several month long relationship with the little girl's mother before she tragically was killed, and even lived with the little girl's mother for a few months. Long enough to where he could get standing under a law that we have in Texas that says if you have lived in the same household with the child for 6 months or more, you can petition for access. And so through this unrelated man who had just dated and lived with the little girl's mother while she was still alive, the trial court was able to do, in our theory, an end run around the grandparent access statute by awarding custody and visitation rights to JD, this unrelated former boyfriend of the mother. As we looked at the record of the case, for us it became clear that this really was an end run, that the trial court likely wanted to give the grandparents some type of visitation, some type of access, but clearly couldn't under the way that Texas had written laws post-Troxel. This gave them that opening, and some of the facts that we learned as we were going through the case indicates that this was, in fact, what the trial court was trying to do, because in that order granting JD access and in the transcript, you actually see the court saying that JD has the authority to basically make any decision that he wants for the little girl while she's in his possession, including sending her to go stay with her grandparents for the entire time.
So let me see if I have this straight. Mom and dad, never married, have a joint custody arrangement. That's all going well. Mom dies in a car accident. Grandparents would like to have more access to the little girl, but the courts don't have power to grant that to grandparents. So the trial judge used the live-in boyfriend, maybe fiance, as kind of a stalking horse to give the grandparents what they couldn't get directly. Is that what's happening here?
Yes, that's what we believe happened here.
And so what's wrong with that? I mean, what's wrong with this picture?
Other than a lot, the primary thing that's wrong with this picture is it violates not only Chris's constitutional rights as a fit parent to direct the care and upbringing of his daughter after a horribly tragic incident in his daughter's life, but it also violates his daughter's constitutional right to have an uninterrupted relationship with her father. We've now introduced this unrelated man who she now has to spend time with under the court order, whether she really wants to or not. And all indications are there wasn't really much of a close relationship there. I think JD was a good boyfriend. He probably helped out a lot with the little girl, probably had a decent enough relationship, but it wasn't the same level of a relationship that a father has with his daughter. He wasn't the child's parent. And it's that violation of the constitutional rights of both Chris and the little girl in this case that really got us interested in getting involved and filing an amicus brief.
So what was your position in your amicus brief that, an amicus brief is intended to help the court understand issues kind of that the parties can't raise. What was your position? What did you bring to the table?
So we came directly at the constitutionality of parental rights. The core of our argument was really that parental rights are inherent and fundamental. These are not something that's given by statute. And we even have some examples from the Supreme Court of Texas where justices have written in various concurring and dissenting opinions that it very clearly state that parental rights are something that are bestowed by the Creator and that lay at the bedrock of our civilization. This is not something that government gives you by way of statute. This is something that exists before government actually even comes into being. I would argue society only exists because the family exists, and therefore government as a function of societal order only exists because the family exists. And embodied within that constitutional rights of parents and children to have an uninterrupted relationship with one another is this idea of what's called the fit parent presumption. It's really well articulated in the Supreme Court Troxel v. Granville case, which is the landmark decision on a lot of the issues that came up in this case. And essentially what it says is it is in the child's best interest to live with their parent, and that fit parent, as long as that parent is fit, has the authority to make whatever decisions that they feel are in the best interest of the child. Now, this presumption should be, and often is, very hard to overcome. And we see in the 100-year history of parental rights jurisprudence from the Supreme Court that they do set a very high bar to prove a parent's unfitness. You know, there are cases where even if a parent doesn't make the best decision, they don't make the ideal decision, that parent is still a fit parent. You're allowed to make mistakes as a parent without the state coming in and taking your kids away from you or saying, well, your kid has to spend time with this other person who they're not related to. So within that argument, we looked at what is this idea of the old soil of statutory interpretation. If parental rights are inherent to who we are as human beings and not given by government, then any statutory rule that governs that parental the parental rights has to be interpreted through that lens of the fundamental nature of parental rights. And so one of the questions that we asked here was, is that constitutional fit parent presumption embodied in the famous best interest of the child standard? For those of your listeners who don't know what best interest of the child standard is, it's been often called the gold standard. Courts across the country are required to make decisions that are in the best interest of the child. And our statutes in Texas say that this is the primary determination that guides the court's decision making, is this action in this child's best interests?
Well, now let me just pause you there for a second. Sure. But the best interest of the child standard in a typical case really is kind of the second question in most of the cases, and traditionally where the courts begin with the natural law constitutional presumption that a fit parent does act in the best interest of the child. Generally speaking, and our position has been, I think you agree with this, the courts have to act on that presumption unless there's some reason. So if a husband and wife go to court and get a divorce and they can't agree on the custody arrangement, somebody has to decide it. And so they in a divorce situation, sometimes the court has to decide what's in the best interest of the child because neither parent, the parents can't agree. They're both fit, but they can't agree. But in this case, there was nothing broken here. The father had all of his rights. There was no one else should have had access to the child to presume, you know, to defeat the presumption. I mean, that's my position. Tell me where I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. I completely agree.
Oh, no, say that again.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, cool.
You can clip that one out and use it in other conversations.
Okay, sorry. Go ahead.
One of the arguments that we made as we were looking at the Texas statutes that applied in this case, these statutes were very clear that you apply the best interest of the child standard at every single stage of a custody dispute. So one of the theories that the other side in this case, JD's counsel, was putting forward is, well, this was just a temporary order. This wasn't a final order. So there's really no reason to change anything until we get to the final order. Our response to that was, your constitutional rights apply at all times. Just because you're in a different procedural stance in the court doesn't mean the constitutional rights still or don't apply in that scenario. And so as we looked at the statutes, what we argued to the court was the fit parent presumption is embodied within the best interest determination. And that's supported by a lot of Supreme Court jurisprudence of, it is presumed that a fit parent will naturally act in the best interest of their child, and it's in the best interest of the child to maintain the relationship with that fit parent. And so even court, if you're applying the best interest, you can't apply best interest without going to the fit parent presumption first. And as soon as you get to the fit parent presumption here, there's no way to overcome the argument that Chris is a fit parent and he made a decision that his daughter should live with him full time and he would make the decisions about her relationship and access to other important individuals in her life, like the grandparents. And from what I understand, that's worked well. She sees her grandparents regularly still. They have a great relationship. They've kind of bridged some of the differences that started in this case. And that's really how this is supposed to work. Parents and grandparents and relatives can work these things out. And it's not for the state, it's not for the courts to come in and say, well, we think you should do this a little bit differently. No, if you're a fit parent, you make those decisions. And that's really the core of what we were arguing.
So you and I helped, we participated in a moot court before oral argument, and now oral argument has occurred. So where does the case stand now, and what do you expect to happen next?
Well, we're waiting on the court to issue their opinion, and the tradition for the Texas Supreme Court is they try to get all of their opinions out by the end of June, and they're really consistent in hitting that deadline. So we expect to see an opinion by the end of June of this year. And we're confident that it's going to be a strong opinion in favor of parental rights.
So you watched the oral argument. This was by Zoom, right?
Yes, by Zoom. So your listeners can actually go onto YouTube, search for Supreme Court of Texas, go onto their YouTube channel, and it's the video called In Re CC is how they styled it for the Supreme Court oral argument. And you can see everyone arguing. Our general counsel, Rob Henneke, actually delivered oral argument for the Texas Public Policy Foundation as amicus. And I thought he did an absolutely incredible job, as he always does in these circumstances.
So just to sum up, I know you have to leave. What's at stake here? I mean, why is this an important case, and as opposed to just kind of a regular case that makes its way up the court system?
What's at stake is the sanctity of the family unit and the ability for parents to make decisions that they feel are in the best interest of their children. What we are trying to protect families against is the precedent that a bad decision in this case would set, which is any person, regardless of whether they have blood relationship with your child, could potentially petition and get visitation and custody rights to your child over your objections. Now, let's take an example. This example was a live-in boyfriend who lived there for 8 to 10 months, depending on the timeline that you're looking at. Say you have a live-in nanny, or you host an au pair for about 10 months, and that person lives in your house and helps take care of your kids and develops a relationship with your kids. Under the theory that's being advanced by JD's side, that person, after their job is done and they go back to their regular life, not taking care of your kids, they could potentially sue you for visitation and custody of your children. It opens a floodgate of any number of unintended consequences that would undermine the relationships between children and their parents.
Yeah, it's a really important case. I know you and I agree about that. And we'll be watching the Texas Supreme Court closely for a decision in the next month and a half or so. And maybe we can have you back to discuss the outcome of the case.
That'd be great. And I'm sad that we didn't get to have tacos when you came to Austin for the moot court. As soon as we're allowed out of quarantine, I owe you some good Austin, Texas tacos.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to hold you to that too. So anything you'd like to say about the Texas Public Policy Foundation before we sign off?
If you want to see the work that we do, you can go to texaspolicy.com. And under the issues, you can see all of the different areas that we get involved in. If you're interested in what we do with child and family policy, just click the drop-down menu and click family, and you can see all the work we're doing there. We really are grateful for the work that you all do, and we're really honored to partner with you all.
Likewise, I just want to, just as a closing note, Andrew and I are part of a broader coalition. I call it a cross-ideological coalition. Sometimes we call it bipartisan. There's a broad spectrum of people working in this area that agree about the kind of fundamental issues that we're talking about often. And it's been very rewarding to work with Andrew and the others on issues that we have been able to make common cause in the cause of protecting children through empowering parents. So for today, I'm Jim Mason, and you can go to our website at parentalrights.org and check us out. Thanks, Andrew.
Thank you.
All right.